and welcome to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that changed their lives and give us a glimpse into their creative process. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and in this episode of This Song, we'll be hearing from Chris Masterson and Eleanor Whitmore, the husband and wife duo known as the Mastersons. Now, I've actually known Chris and Eleanor for a really long time, like from before they were even a couple. That's because they both lived in Austin, Texas, back when we were all in our like 20s, and they were playing Americana around Austin, and I was playing Americana around Austin, and everybody kind of knew each other. Chris played guitar with a bunch of touring bands, and Eleanor played with a ton of bands, Bruce Robinson and Kelly Willis, and they got together and they got married. And then 7 years ago, I heard that they had landed the Steve Earle gig. Like, they're both members of the Dukes. And then a couple years later, they released their first record as the Mastersons. It was called Birds Fly South. Now, the Mastersons tour, like, all the time. Steve Earle keeps them pretty busy. He has an intense schedule. And in addition to backing him up, they also open his shows. And when they're not touring with Steve, they tour as the Mastersons. So even though now they technically live in Los Angeles, really? They live on the road, which makes the title of their third record, Transient Lullaby, so appropriate. They were here in Austin in May to celebrate the release of that record, and they came by KUTX to tell me about some of the songs and even like a fiddle solo that inspire the work they're making now. So here they are, Chris Masterson and Eleanor Whitmore, the Mastersons.
You know, I think when we set out to make this record, what we often listen to at home, and we have a nice hi-fi and listen to a lot of vinyl, we don't own a television, there's just a lot of stuff that I would call late night music, you know, and you know, I love, you know, someone like Daniel Lanois, like, or listening to Emmylou's Wrecking Ball, or almost anything Dan Lanois's been a part of, like, lends itself to that, like super hi-fi sounding, and you just can sit on your couch and take it in. And
my life's an open book, you read it on the radio. We got nowhere to hide, we got nowhere to go.
It's kind of that, those sonic landscapes that, you know, put us in the headspace for this record.
To take a ride,
meet me at the wrecking ball.
I'll wear something pretty and white.
That record does it for me.
That song?
No, I was just thinking of that record in general. I mean, a lot of what Emmy does, like we were talking about, If I Could Only Win Your Love the other day, like, and how her and Herb Peterson sing that together. And when you, you know, sing harmony, you know, you start to dive into, you know, how to construct a harmony part. That's not just someone singing the fifth, or I'll jump on this chorus here where you fall into unison and someone, you know, falls in and out of the lead part.
If I could only win your love, I'd give my all to make it live. You'll never know how much I'd give if I could only win your love.
But I think a lot of that stuff, I didn't even, I grew up with country records on all the time, but until you, you know, start trying to figure out how to sing, you know, with your significant other. Like, I never even realized the mechanics of it, just because it sounds like it's supposed to be like that, you know, and when it's done right. Or you could talk about, like, Graham and Emmy and how they sang together, or Buddy and Julie Miller, or like, the Leuven Brothers, you know, the siblings and all that stuff. Like, it until you, you know, study it, you don't realize. They make it sound effortless.
By heeding God's call, for what is a
treasure in things I despise. I like the Christian life.
So you have like a lot of experience singing harmonies, but is it different to, for the two of you to sing together? Is it like, are you trying to do something different and more interesting when you do Masterson stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we like, when we say come up, write a new song, we'll try it in a bunch of keys with like, you know, here's Chris singing lead, here's Eleanor singing lead, here's where it works unison, because it's tricky, you know, you get something that might work for me and it's too high for her, or vice versa.
And I think it's also kind of tricky just to, you know, not every single line or every single song needs harmony everywhere. You know, so it's, you know, sometimes that's the writing, and, you know, that's why sometimes we'll maybe flip into unison in certain parts, because it doesn't make sense to do harmony there. So, yeah, we definitely kind of experiment with it a lot and see what works and what doesn't.
Like I said, until we really started doing this for a living, I never studied stuff like that. I mean, I would, you know, sing harmony on the chorus of a song, and, you know, you're just trying to blend and still, you know, be behind whoever, you know, is the storyteller or the lead singer. But no, I guess once we started doing this, that's when I started, like, you know, I always kind of liked the Jayhawks, but it wasn't something we, like, referenced when we made our first record. And then, like, people that reviewed it started, you know, giving, you know, sort of favorable comparisons. And then you start listening to, like, Gary Louris and Mark Olson, and how they'll be in harmony, then they'll fall into a unison. You know, it's things that we were just kind of unintentionally doing.
Stood by on believing, stood by on my own. Always thought I was someone, turned out I was wrong. But you brought me through, and you made me feel so blue.
What do you think the emotional impact or the emotional implications are of harmony? You know, like, I think it's not just complimentary notes, and I feel like that's what you guys keep on saying, like, it's not just about singing a third above what's sung. Like, what is it about harmony, apart from like a musical, like, note structure standpoint, like, what kind of impact does harmony have on, like, the soul of the music, I guess?
I think there is something emotional, though, that happens with harmony. And I don't know if it's, you know, based on something technical or what, but it's, you know, there's, you know, something very true about certain intervals. And then, you know, you add a suspension and it creates tension and it moves the listener. And, you know, I think that, you know, that's really just arranging and kind of finding the right notes that kind of bring out, you know, the emotion and the lyrics that you're trying to support.
But it could give a line more impact too, to have
absolutely
someone chime in, you know, just you know, on the meaning of that, whatever that given line is.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's an extra added dimension because you guys are married. But like, when you talk about harmony singers, you know, a lot of times there's a relationship there. Like, sometimes there's a family relationship. Sometimes mm-hmm. there's, like, a love relationship. Or a friend. Or, like, in the Jayhawks, there was, like, a friend relationship there.
They were friends sometimes.
Sometimes. Sometimes. But do you think that, like, that the harmonies that you sing can be, like, an expression of, like, a larger you, you know?
I think so. And I mean, I've always been, you know, a fan. I mean, to hear, like, Eleanor sing with her sister, Bonnie Whitmore. I mean, like, there's that, like, when siblings do it, or, you know, you think of the Jackson Five, or you think of the Louvin Brothers, or there's, you know, there's something that's just, it's in their blood, and it's there. But also, like, when a married couple, you know, whether they're happy or whether they're, like, Richard and Linda Thompson writing Shoot Out the Lights in the throes of a divorce, like, that's powerful.
It scares you when you don't know whichever way the wind might blow.
I'm walking on a wire. I'm walking on a wire. And I'm falling.
I'm walking on a wire. Was it a real focus of this record? Did you, I mean, because you've done, this is your third record. You've done harmonies on all of your records, but did you guys have more of a focus on this record?
There was a song on the first record called Crash Test, and that was one we wrote together, and I think that's one of the few on the first record where we sing sort of as one singer for the duration of the song. And
it kind of became the template for what we were looking to do, you know, writing-wise and with harmonies is, you know, we wanted to be able to write songs where you could kind of sing together the whole way through as one voice.
I wanna ride with you, travel through space and time with you. I wanna ride with you.
But then we went, on the second record, we made it, in California with Jim Scott, and I feel like we had that sort of Crash Test template going, but Good Luck Charm is a really loud record in a way. It's a, you know, jangly guitars, and it's poppy, and it's sunny, and it's like we're on the street corner yelling at people. And then, but when we sat down to start talking about this record with our friend George Reef, who co-produced it with me, we were talking about the late night record, that, you know, trying to make something that you would put on late at night, first of all. And George kind of, you know, one of his first comments was just, you know, what about just singing softer, just a more laconic, you know, lazier, and just, you know, just taking it down a notch. And so I think that's, you know, that's sort of led to the sound on this record.
So you said that the late night, that's another kind of part of what you were listening to, is you've got all these harmony singers on one side, and then you've got like Daniel Lanois texture stuff, mm-hmm. late night stuff.
Yeah.
Is that kind of
vibe and kind of more dark sonically, you know, a little warmer and darker.
There's just a way of recording that, you know, you can play whatever instrument, whether you're the drummer or you're playing vibraphone or like, or singing, you can make the microphone come to you.
Oh, that's interesting. Tell me more about that. So how does that work?
You know, a lot of the records that I'll put on at night, the musicians aren't playing their instruments that hard. You know, they're playing soft, and then they're letting the microphones kind of capture them. You can always turn it up, but with the sounds that are pleasing to me aren't when people are bashing. And singing goes the same way. It's just like, well, we can just take it down a notch. And so when we made this record, it was really performance-based, and it was to tape. And we're sitting in a room not much bigger than this, well, probably smaller than this room we're in, like with microphones looking at each other, playing our instruments and singing. And that's what you hear. I mean, there may be a fix or two here and there, but it's just... letting the microphones do the work and letting the mics chase you.
Say what you want, take what you need. I'll be the one you can count on to play wicked games.
Things that really influenced me growing up. One fiddle solo in particular that just kind of changed my life was Johnny Gimble's fiddle solo on Right or Wrong.
Do you remember what it was about that particular Johnny Gimble solo that blew your mind?
Well, it's just the way that he starts it. It's like very acrobatic, the way that he just rips into that solo. It took me, I'm still actually figuring out. I've learned it. I've sat down and spent, you know, many hours studying that solo, and every time I listen to it, I realize that I've learned it wrong, and I find another note that I've missed, and it's just amazing the ideas that Johnny had as a player. He was really quite inspiring. Also, just, you know, listening to a lot of old Ray Price records where you've got, you know, these really beautiful string arrangements, but then there's still a fiddle solo, you know, in the tune. So it's like orchestrated, but then it's still country. And, you know, and I grew up playing classical and, you know, playing by ear and playing fiddle. And I really like to ride that ridge and be able to do both of those things.
Lay your head upon my pillow. Hold your warm and tender body close to mine.
Well, and it's interesting, too, that you're attracted to, like, orchestration is very, I mean, it's very orchestrated, right? Like,
yeah.
there's a way that you do it. And then there's Johnny Gimble, which is improvisation.
Yeah.
And so has that been a thing that, like, a line that you've walked your whole life? Like,
always. I feel like every time I'm improvising and I'm, you know, playing more in improvisational styles, I'm, you know, I'm constantly fighting my, you know, orchestral training and the squareness of, you know, having a certain part and, you know, just trying to loosen it up. And
she plays violin and fiddle.
But then, you know, I'll go to do a string arrangement and I'm like feeling really sloppy and like I need to warm up and do some scales first or something. So,
well, it's interesting because actually there is a distinction between violin and fiddle. Most people don't play both.
That's
you
true.
Know, like most people play fiddle, mm-hmm. which is like based in the country oeuvre and it's mm-hmm. very like based around improvisation, or they play like
violin.
So that's I didn't actually know that you did both. That's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a product of my upbringing. My mom was an opera singer and my dad was a folk singer, so I kind of had to do both.
But I think that in this type of music it can happen a lot. And you know, one thing that, you know, over the course of our band we've always had sort of this, there's been this split where both, you know, we're both Southern, she being from Denton and I was born in Louisiana and grew up in Houston. So like there will always be Southern elements to what we do. Yet, you know, we're both Anglophiles and, you know, loved, you know, Kinks records and the Zombies and the Beatles. And that, you know, that affected a lot of the chord structure. So there's always, you know, there's always a bit, you know, if we write something that's it seems too country, we'll throw some weird minor chords in it and change the production. Or if we write a pop song, that's when the fiddle comes out. Or, you know, so that we've always tried to turn things on their ear and make them maybe not quite what you expect to hear.
I've gone miles and endless miles, a pilgrim of the interstate. Oh, you know I can't stay long.
Is Transient Lullaby from their new record of the same name. And true to form, like Eleanor and Chris are on tour with Steve Earle right now. If you would like to hear them sing you a Transient Lullaby, then you should go see them. I'll be sure to put a link to their tour dates on the show notes page for this episode on KUTX.org. KUTX, in case you didn't know, is the radio station where we make this podcast. And they also came into Studio 1A, like our big, gorgeous live performance studio here at the station, and did a live set. And I'll post a link to that on the show notes page, too, so that you can dive deep with the Mastersons. And, you know, during the interview, they talked about working with George Reef on this latest record. And a couple of days after our conversation, George actually passed away. It was a big shock here in Austin because George was a beloved bass player and producer, and When I was getting this interview ready for this episode, I just kept thinking about how you should totally go listen to my friend Johnny Gowdy's podcast, How Did I Get Here? He interviewed Chris and Eleanor the day after George passed, and it's a really great interview and a great tribute to George. And he also interviewed George a couple of times. His interviews give you this really nice insight into why everyone was a George Reef fan. It's worth your time, I promise. And you can find Johnny's podcast, How Did I Get Here, anywhere. He's got like a ton of episodes. And this podcast also has a lot of archived material worth listening to. You can find conversations with other songwriting duos like Amelia Meath and Nick Sanborn of Sylvan Esso or Tegan and Sarah. And you can find all of these episodes on the podcast app or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there perusing the archive, we'd love it if you would leave a rating or a review, because ratings help us a lot. They help people find this podcast, which is what we want. And also, you can help people find this podcast, like by telling people about it. You can share it with your friends online or in real life. We totally thank you in advance for that. And that's it. You have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9 in Austin, Texas. This episode was produced and edited by David Sanger and me, Elizabeth McQueen. Taylor Wallace curates our Instagram account. Kelly Seal is our excellent intern. And thank you to Deidre Gott and Peter Babb and Todd Callahan for all they do for this podcast. And it's true. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own Hard Proof. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Snapchat. Our handle is @ThisSongKUTX. You can like us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to This Song along with the other KUTX podcasts, Austin Music Minute, Liner Notes, and Song of the Day on the podcast app or wherever you get your podcasts. Right on. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.